This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. If you suffer from a diabetic complication, radiation damage, stroke, or a degenerative condition, hyperbaric oxygen therapy may be right for you. Ask your doctor about how HBOT can help you achieve your optimal health. Call Hyperbaric Medical Solutions at 844-877-HBOT or visit hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com/Hoffman to learn more. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to consider a subject that I think is of utmost importance to health and well-being. And often our themes relate to diet, to nutrition, to some new wonder supplement or herb. Perhaps we pay attention to exercise and other aspects of lifestyle. Today we're going to talk about, I think, a very, very important component for your health portfolio. And it has to do with meditation. We're going to talk to one of the foremost academic experts on the subject of meditation. He's written a book entitled Supermind, How to Boost Performance and Live a Richer and Happier Life Through Transcendental Meditation. He's Dr. Norman Rosenthal, and he's written many best-selling books, including a previous book called Transcendence, Healing and Transformation Through Transcendental Meditation. He's also written a great book called The Gift of Adversity. It probably has to do with the subject of resilience. And he's an expert on seasonal affective disorder. In fact, he has claimed the distinction of being the first psychiatrist to describe and diagnose seasonal affective disorder. That was several decades ago. And the book about that subject, it's in its fourth edition, is entitled Winter Blues. So it's a great pleasure to have with us the author of Supermind, Dr. Norman Rosenthal. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And I might add that you are a clinical professor of psychiatry at Georgetown University School of Medicine, and a researcher at the National Institute of Mental Health. So tell us what you mean by supermind. Supermind has kind of a mystical connotation.
I'm talking about the mind at its optimal function. What that means to me is that you are as creative, as productive, as competent as you can be. Your performance is at a peak, but you're also enjoying the experience of living. So it's not just super working or super
right.
functioning. It's super being as well. And so it's a mind working well objectively and subjectively.
Well, in the book, I think you seek to achieve a balance between sort of utilitarian model for meditation, like, okay, meditation is going to make you more efficient, better at your job, it'll make you rich, it'll make you healthier, it'll improve your immunity, but also that there are, you know, less tangible spiritual or emotional benefits to meditation that, you know, may override even some of these material concerns.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, I developed a questionnaire that is geared towards measuring what I call the supermind. And part of that questionnaire is involving a growth of consciousness, an evolution, if you like, of consciousness. And the other half, and the other part is develop the gifts of consciousness. In other words, what are the gifts that come when your consciousness expands as a result of meditation? So it's the growth of consciousness and the gifts of consciousness all wrapped up together that constitute the supermind.
Well, help us with a broader definition of consciousness, because I think a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm not unconscious. I'm aware of my surroundings. I'm highly attuned to, you know, everything that's going on. So I'm conscious. Is that a limited definition of consciousness?
Well, it's a very reasonable beginning, but I don't think it's the end of the story. The science of consciousness has evolved in the last couple of decades. In other words, if you're aware of something, you're conscious of it. And what the science of consciousness has shown is that we can detect by measuring brainwave whether somebody is aware of a stimulus or not. They have different features, if you're aware and if you're unaware. In fact, you know, so many stimuli are impinging upon us all the time that if we were aware of them all, I think it would be like in a room where there was so much noise you couldn't even hear yourself think.
Mm-hmm.
So
or like an LSD trip, you know, like a hallucinogenic voyage, you know, where everything assumes equal importance.
Yes, yes, exactly. So there's a great value in having your stimuli modulated, damped down, so that the important signals come through. And it's those important signals that will rise to the state of consciousness. And you see, you know, large movements in the brain waves occurring when a stimulus is conscious versus unconscious. So that is something that is, at a very basic level, what we mean by consciousness. But throughout the ages, people, especially in Eastern traditions, but not exclusively, have talked about consciousness states that go beyond the three ordinary states of consciousness. They're waking, sleeping, and dreaming, which everybody recognizes as being conscious. But even the classic so-called father of psychology, William James, recognized that aside from these states, there are other states of consciousness that you might live all your life without ever accessing, but that at the appropriate stimulus, you will access these states quite readily, and you'll see them in all their full existence. And he was hypothesizing that he's sure that somewhere there must be an applicability and a value to these states of consciousness. So that is, to some extent, what the book also deals with. What happens when you meditate? And in this case, I've used transcendental meditation as the probe or the stimulus in question. What happens when you meditate? What kind of state of consciousness do you enter? And what happens after that? And that is what I deal with in the beginning of the book. How is that state of consciousness when you transcend, which is what happens when you meditate? What is transcendence, which funnily enough is the name of the earlier book, Transcendence? And then this book deals with what happens when that transcendence filters into your daily life and sits there side by side with the ordinary activities, the engagement that you need to do with your world, the dealings that you need to have, everything that is required for making a living, being a friend, being a family person, whatever it is that you need to do, you have to do it alongside this kind of growing state of transcendence in your daily life. That's when the supermind begins to click in. So I hope that's clear.
Well, we'll flesh it out in terms of some specific examples that make it more tangible. But before we get to that, do you feel that we're in sort of a crisis of modern consciousness? Because a lot of people decry our current electronic revolution where, you know, people spend hours and hours on the internet with diminishing attention span. That sounds almost like the opposite of meditation. It sounds like a recipe for adult attention deficit disorder.
Absolutely. I think you put it, you know, better than I can. You know, our consciousness becomes squandered, scattered, dislocated. We think we're getting more, but we may actually be getting less. And it's interesting that the poet William Wordsworth in the 19th century wrote a very famous sonnet that starts, "The world is too much with us."
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. And, you know, I wonder what he would have had to say about how we lay waste our powers today, you know, with having the world be too much with us day and night. Instagram and Facebook, Twitter and LinkedIn, you know, I mean, the channels of access to our consciousness are virtually unlimited. So how do we make the choices? How do we stick with what we're doing in order to not lay waste our powers? That's a question I think worth wondering about.
And as a psychiatrist, do you think that the net result of all the stimulus response may be heightened levels of anxiety, boredom, depression, anger, or, you know, some of the diseases that we treat with medication these days? Attention deficit disorder is rampant among children, and now we've defined it as a disorder among adults. We give them medication to help them focus better.
Yes, in fact, I have a section here called the ADD of Everyday Life. You know, with some people saying, well, you know, pretty much everybody seems to have some form of attention deficit disorder because of the way we sort of fragment our consciousness.
Right. It's almost like institutionalized ADD. It's really a societal problem. What are the physiologic changes that occur during meditation? I mean, you've studied this. I mean, I think you've put EEGs on meditators. You've studied their blood pressure, their heart rate, you know, all manner of parameters. They're wired up, and sometimes you can also link meditation to certain health outcomes. So what actually happens to the body?
Well, I think at this point I really do need to say that there are different kinds of meditation.
Okay.
And it's not correct to say meditation causes A, B, C, D, and E without specifying them, because they could cause very different effects. Because in these different types of meditation, a person is doing something different with their brain. So let's take two very common forms. The one that I predominantly deal with in this book, which is called Transcendental Meditation, where the goal is to use a mantra, which is like a word sound, in a very effortless way that it just kind of comes almost through you. You almost kind of letting it, thinking it in a very kind of automatic way that then moves you into the state of consciousness called transcendence. And the goal of this meditation is through these changes in consciousness to develop new skills and new qualities and traits in your daily life. So that's one form. It comes from the ancient Vedic tradition in India, thousands of years. And then the other very popular form of meditation is called mindfulness. And that comes from the Buddhist tradition, also thousands of years old. But in this form of meditation, you're asked to focus, to attend right here and now to the stimuli of the moment. And it could be your breath, it could be a thought of loving kindness, it could be an image, but you're asked to focus on it. And the results are different. But the one that I know the most about, and that's the subject of this book, is the one I'd like to talk about, because, you know, that's what the supermind is all about, and that is the transcendence. When you go into a meditative state using TM, what you see is a change in the predominant wavelength of the brain. What takes over is the alpha wave. It's a slow wave form. It passes in a flux over the brain. It is its maximum concentration in the frontal part of the brain. And there's also an increase in what's called coherence. What that means is different regions of the brain show the same wavelength as one another. So there's a correspondence between different regions which may signal an improvement in their cooperation with one another. So these are changes that you see. While those things are happening, the body is changing. You're relaxing, the breathing is slowing down, everything is kind of settling down in peace and quiet. And the subjective sense is in the mind that the mind is alert but calm at the same time, which is kind of novel, because normally, you know, if you're calm, you're not that alert, and if you're alert, then, you know, you're not that calm. It's curious to have these coexisting. Boundaries seem to melt away, you know, where am I, what day is it? Not that you lose track of where you are, really. If somebody shook you and asked you, you'd know. But at that moment, when you're transcending, it doesn't seem to matter, because there's a really blissful, joyful sense that you're experiencing. That's the transcendent consciousness. That's known as the fourth stage of consciousness. Waking, sleeping, and dreaming are three, and that's the fourth one. Then when that filters into your daily life and sits there side by side with activity, that's called the fifth state of consciousness, and that's what the supermind is all about.
So in other words, you don't have to be meditating, but you can bring forth that consciousness or that experience to illuminate your daily activities in some way.
That's correct. It kind of stays with you. There's an ongoing presence of that consciousness.
So a fundamental question is, and you know, I've meditated, and I gotta admit that I'm not, I'm probably better on nutrition and exercise and taking supplements than I am on meditation. I'll admit that's one part of my portfolio I need to round out. But how do you know that you're doing it right? I mean, you're sitting there and nobody's in your head, and you know, it's sort of like the opposite of accomplishing something. I mean, you know. You know, when you run, you know, 5 miles that you've run 5 miles, you know, when you carry a Fitbit that you've done 10,000 steps, you know, when, you know, you've eaten your broccoli, or you've taken your coenzyme Q10. I mean, these are things that are, you know, you can monitor, but how do you, you know, you're sitting there, you've expended 20 or 30 minutes, sitting quietly. And how do you know that you've gotten the most out of that experience?
Well, you know, I think that's a great question. And, you know, it is subjective. But I would hesitate to use the word the most. The reason for that is that they encourage you not to judge your meditation. Was this a good one? Did I get an A? Did I get a B?
Right.
How good was that?
Right.
You know, that's like a Western way of thinking.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, the way of thinking is, firstly, I just want to be sure I'm doing it the right way, which is as I've been taught, and in a way that's effortless. And then you get rewards, and some of those rewards come almost immediately when you've finished that 20 minutes. Sometimes you can feel very refreshed. When I was writing Supermind, for example, I would get to a point where I couldn't write another word. My brain just kind of clogged up on me.
Right. I'm familiar with that experience as a writer. Yeah.
I thought you might be, because it is quite common. I do my 20 minutes of meditation, and all of a sudden the words would flow again.
Mm-hmm.
I had kind of released some kind of blockage, some kind of tension. Sometimes when I'm meditating, I'll feel a deep breath, you know, deep breath, not the one that I would take consciously or deliberately, but one that would flow almost automatically as I would feel the release of tension,
mm-hmm.
almost physically, almost literally.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the 20 minutes, just feel a sense of being refreshed. And so you almost get an immediate feedback. It's almost like after a good meal,
mm-hmm.
you'll feel good. But after a heavy meal, you won't feel good.
Yeah.
And or after a meal that hasn't got enough in it or enough protein or carbohydrate, you might not feel good.
Yeah.
So the subjective experience is very important. But the good thing about this particular kind of meditation is you're taught by a teacher and you're able to go back anytime and get it checked, refreshed. That's what happened to me. I originally did my TM training in 1973. And I let it lapse for 35 years. And then I took it up again 8 years ago, and I have been meditating conscientiously ever since. But the involvement of teachers to keep you on track, because any technique will degrade with time. I was just talking with a client earlier, and he's an avid golfer, and you know how your golf swing might decline, and then you might need a lesson with a pro to sort of get your hand movements right again, and the ball goes right down the middle. And that's the same with a meditation. You might be putting in too much effort or putting in too much, as I said, judging it. Is this right? Am I doing this right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not conducive to transcending. That's conducive to being a Western critical self-evaluator.
Right, which is antithetical to the spirit of meditation. I once heard an interview with Jerry Seinfeld, who, unbeknownst to me, is a very, very dedicated meditator. And he, throughout even the Seinfeld series, he meditated. And, the way he described it was, he said to the interviewer, he said, think of the most refreshing sleep you've ever had. You know, you wake up and you just feel fantastic. Well, think of something even better than that. And that's what it's like to come out of a meditation. So I thought, wow, that's certainly a great way to describe the benefits.
Yes, he's really done some wonderful interviews on the subject, and he credits it with enabling him to remain vibrant and creative and energetic, even in his 60s, where most of his peers who had started out in stand-up with him had fallen by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
So he is a real advertisement for the technique.
Yeah, you know, perhaps succumbing to addiction or to you know, various types of burnout, depression, you know, pretty common in people in those high-flying careers. Well, let's say that you're a religiously observant Christian, Muslim, or Jew, you know, someone who routinely prays and prays intently. Can you get some of the same benefits out of praying, or is this something different of a higher order, or is it because it seems it has almost like a quasi-religious, aspect to it? Is it antithetical to traditional religion?
Well, you're asking several good questions. Let me take them
sure.
in turn.
Yep.
Firstly, you know, I don't think your question can be answered in any scientific way.
Mm-hmm.
There are basic differences between praying and meditating, because when you're praying, you're petitioning an entity. You know, keep me safe, help my family, I'm praying for this one, I'm praying for that one, I'm praying for good health. You're praying for something, you know? Now, so there's a clear objective there. When you're meditating, there's no objective to the meditation, unless it's loving kindness meditation, where you are wishing that no harm will come to yourself and other people. But in this form of meditation, transcendental meditation, there is no, you're not asking for anything from anybody, nor is there any connection necessarily with a higher power of any kind, or a cosmology, or a set of rituals. It's a standalone technique, which I think makes it very hospitable to people of any religion or people who don't have any religion. I think anybody can do it. That's one thing I like about it. Then I can recommend it to people, knowing that it doesn't violate their religious or ethical, you know, practices, because mm-hmm. it's just the chanting or the thinking of a word internally.
So it's non-denominational. It's in effect a spiritual practice, but it's very universal. As a tool for achieving a higher level of consciousness. Okay, we've laid the groundwork for a discussion of TM. The book is Supermind, and our guest is Dr. Norman Rosenthal. He is a clinical professor of psychiatry at Georgetown University School of Medicine, and an expert on the subject of meditation. When we return, we've got more questions to ask, and we'll talk in terms of tangibly, you know, how do you get started? What does it entail? I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.